Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. What happens when a student passes away on a college campus? How does one keep from feeling isolated? How does one talk to the students who shared a classroom with the student who died? There is an article written by Dr. Christine McCusker, who is our guest today, and Laurie Witherow of the University College here on campus, titled Bereavement on the College Campus, Establishing an Effective Ritual for the Classroom and Beyond, published in the March-April 2012 edition of About Campus magazine. We'll talk with Dr. McCusker, who is a professor of history here at MTSU, after this from MTSUnews.com.
Here are some of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. The number of MTSU students studying abroad this summer and in the coming academic year has hit an all-time high. In all, 193 MTSU students received a total of $279,000 in institutional scholarships to support their studies abroad. MTSU junior Daniel Murphy is the recipient of a 2013 stipend from the Barry M. Goldwater Scholarship and Excellence in Education Program. Murphy, a University Honors College student with double majors in physics and philosophy, wants to pursue a doctorate in atomic physics. And the MTSU Student Farmers Market is open on Fridays this summer at the Horticulture Center on Lightning Way, across from the Tennessee Livestock Center. For MTSU News at any time, go to MTSUnews.com. That's MTSUnews.com.
Chris, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
This article that you and Laurie Witherow co-wrote starts out by talking about a student who stepped in front of a train, committed suicide by stepping in front of a train. Mm-hmm. It became the impetus for a multifaceted group of individuals here at MTSU mm-hmm. to get together and address this issue. Talk about this group of people.
Well, let me start first with the catalyst, because the catalyst came when I realized that I had heard of the student before from a colleague who was a full-time temp in his first semester of teaching. It was December, which means that this young man had been in class for a while, and that this young man had had potentially a relatively close relationship with this faculty member. And when I came in on the Monday morning after reading about this the day before, I walked into my colleague's office and I said, I have a feeling that you know this young man. And he said, yes. And I said, did you know that he committed suicide Thursday night? And it floored him. He had not been told. Because of the way that Facebook and other systems work, one of the things that you have to take care of in this situation is making sure your information is correct. So many rumors around. So the administration is always very careful with those. But by the time we had found out, the young man had been buried. And so some of the common rituals that were available to my colleague through going to a funeral, grieving with the family, had already happened. It had already passed. And so talking to his department chair, this faculty member was in Global Studies, which shares office space with history, I remember the chair sitting there saying, I don't know what to say to you. I don't know what to say to you, because we were all floored that this horrific thing had happened. And the thing about students for a faculty member, what I tell my students is that I'm in the potential business. I come into a room and they're all mystery novels, and I get to be a character on one of those pages. And the end of the mystery is them fully realizing their potential. And one of the hard parts about my job is I'm never at the end, or I'm usually not at the end of the novel. I never see the potential come, but I know it's going to come. But for a student to commit suicide or to die means that potential ends there, and I do know the end, and the end is not a very pleasant ending. And so the faculty supervisor's response to my colleague, my response to the colleague, what do we do? I don't know what to say to you. And repeating it and just feeling helpless is not a comfortable place to be. First of all, because we don't like being uncomfortable. But also, we have an obligation to our students to relay the news and help them through this. I went to Deb Sells, who was Vice President of Student Affairs, and said, you know, Deb, we need to do something about this. This can't happen. And Deb's response was, well, Chris, you know, I only have 6 counselors for 26,000 students. I can't get a counselor to every faculty member when something like this happens. And I said, my response was, is that, you know, what you have is a series of experts on campus who are already well-schooled in this, and those are your faculty. And so we gathered together this faculty group, and the faculty group was quite diverse. We had nursing professors. We had sociology professors. We had my colleague from Global Studies, who's now moved on. And we had me. I'm a history professor who studies death rituals, who understands that as a cultural historian, I understand that rites and rituals are anchors in times of chaos.
And they vary so widely.
They do, you know, and they do. They can. And that what we needed was a set prescribed set of rituals that could be applied if something happened like this. And so that's the way it happened, is the way it started. And so we got together and we brainstormed. We're a working group. We're not a committee, because faculty members don't want more committee work. And we got together and said, what's the best way to do this? And the best way came to be producing a brochure and creating a coaching team who go in and help when a student dies. Now, one of the things I should say is that with this particular incident with this young man who committed suicide, what ended up happening is my colleague, very gracious young man, an outstanding educator, went in and he told his students, and they were very devastated, but he was a good guide for them to figure out how to mourn this death. And what they ended up doing is that they knew him pretty well, and so they went and sat in the KUC and together as a group, and they sat there and read to each other from the New York Times. So that was something he liked to do, was to read the New York Times. So they sat there and they read to each other from the New York Times. And we taught them how to grieve. Where there was no ritual, they created the ritual and then supported each other through it.
And made it individualized to the person who had passed away. How does one take into account the various ways in which we all mourn and grieve, some of which are tied to religion and others not?
That's a really awesome question. The thing is, though, on this campus, we have an obligation, because we have such a diverse population, to keep it as secular as possible when we are interacting, while acknowledging that various people will have different reactions to the death based on their own spiritual practice. So the idea is that we don't cut anybody off by any means. And we honor each individual's response, but we don't impose our own spiritual beliefs on these students. And to teach them, in recognition that there are various ways that other people are going to respond, we're not a Christian school, we're not a Muslim school. We have an obligation as a public university that I have students of all faiths in my class, agnostic, atheist, Muslim, Christian, Jewish. And I have an obligation to create a space for them where they can grieve together and at the same time acknowledge them as individuals with specific beliefs. And so what we did is it's that tailoring to the circumstance. Here is this group of people. How do we speak to them as a specific group of people in a specific moment and place? We know that the rituals that we created through the creation of a coaching staff, through the creation of the brochure, to keep it as general as possible, knowing that each faculty and each student will use that as a starting place, but not an end place.
We'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record after this break.
MTSU's Jewish and Holocaust Studies minor offers undergraduate students a chance to study the culture and religion of the Jewish people and the Holocaust in an interdisciplinary program. Studies include history and culture, theology and philosophy, and the arts and social sciences. Courses tackle vital topics central to local and global awareness, including multiculturalism and the meanings of diversity, religious tolerance, and genocide. For the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Christine McCusker, professor of history at MTSU and co-author with Lori Witherow of the University College of Bereavement on the college campus, talking about how MTSU developed coping skills for instances in which students pass away. You know, the assumption on a lot of people's parts before they send their kids to college, it certainly was something that my father told me, is, you know, you go away to this big university and the professors are not going to hold your hand the way they did in K through 12. They don't care whether you get it or not. They're there. You've got to be proactive. You've got to pick up the material on your own. And they don't form these bonds or mentor-protege relationships mm-hmm. with you. And so I think the assumption on the part of a lot of people is that when you go to a college the size of MTSU, that professors and students don't form these bonds or these relationships in which people become close, or in which they have shared experiences that mm-hmm. will touch them for the rest of their lives. But I'm here to tell you from my own personal experience, and you know it as well as anybody else, nothing could be further from the truth. Yeah, I mean, you don't live in a vacuum.
Mm-mm. No, and I think about some of the students that I've had. We've had some real successes in the past year or so with placing students in jobs, and I'm as happy and as teary-eyed as anybody else, because these are mine, you know. And I get, sometimes I do get a little bit teary-eyed about this stuff because that's the way I operate. I adore my job because I adore my students. And even if the student isn't, you know, I'll teach a large section of U.S. History 2 every spring. Even if I don't know the student personally, I have a graduate teaching assistant who does. And that person also knows other people in classes. We cannot retain students unless that mentor relationship is at least possible. It is not practical in all cases. With 235 students in a spring semester class, I will have people I'll be able to talk to and people I won't. And I rely on my TAs to create those bonds. This place would fall to pieces if we didn't just absolutely adore our students. And so when they die, we have that grief. It's part of the process. And we, you know, in this sort of social Darwinist way of your dad sort of, you know, it's survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, I get that you got to step up. You got to meet me halfway. I'm not going to go chasing you.
Right.
And that's about schoolwork, though. You know, that's about you doing your work and you getting your stuff done.
But he was a high school teacher and coach himself, and he also knew that no teacher is worth a damn if they don't have passion for what they're doing.
Exactly, exactly. And but the thing is that, you know, part of my job is to teach etiquette. Part of my job is to teach my students that that when you refer to me, I have a title. And when you speak to me, there's certain things you speak to me about and certain things you don't. I don't want to know about the problems with the boyfriend, for example,
uh-huh.
you know, unless it's getting in the way of your work and you're in a place where you're not safe, okay?
Right.
That the mundane stuff. But when something traumatic or dramatic that impinges on your ability to be successful as a student happens, and there is a life skill that you can learn from this as a student, I have an obligation to step up and be a support system. You know, I'll never forget, we had a student five years ago, when I was undergraduate director in the mid-2000s, her husband died of brain cancer the first Monday of school. We had an obligation to step up and say, okay, this really stinks. We need to make sure that you do the grieving you need to do, but we also need to make sure that you are responsible to yourself and you're going to class, and that we help create a safe space for you to grieve and to also pursue your degree, because that's my job.
How do you help a student balance their grief with the continuing responsibility of grades and finances and everyday life?
Well, part of it is recognizing that there is a line that I have to draw, that I can't fix it. I can provide counseling, I can provide mentorship, but I cannot fix it and I cannot do it. I can check in with people and remind them. So part of it is understanding what I can and cannot do. Another part of it is to say, here are the real experts on campus when it comes to housing. Here are the real experts on campus when it comes to finances. Go talk to them. Be proactive on your behalf. my mom and dad aren't here anymore. I need to learn to take better care of myself.
And some of these students' parents are thousands of miles away. Some of them are in foreign countries. So it's easy to feel isolated.
It is. And so for us as faculty, and it's a retention issue too. And there's literature that's talked about in the article, what happens if somebody dies? What happens to them? Well, they do feel isolated. Their grades do go down. And in an age of retaining students, we have to be paying attention to that, because it's a difference between the student coming back the next semester and the student not, or having to dig themselves out of an academic hole or not.
There are some things that a professor can do, such as, say, extend the deadline for an assignment.
Certainly.
For a grieving student.
But yes.
the grieving student can't just glom on to the professor, who also has a spouse and children. Mm-hmm. And a life outside of academia.
Yeah.
That's not productive for either the professor or the student.
No, and you know, my mom is a therapist, or was before she retired, a therapist in private practice, and she loved the way that I used to make the distinction. And that is that I would say to students who wanted to confess their entire life of sins to me, you know, as a history professor, if you're standing on a bridge and you're about to jump off, all I can say is don't do it. Whereas a psychologist or a counselor, we have multiple outlets on campus for our students to invest in that kind of therapy. They're going to say, why do you want to jump off the bridge? And so we've, as faculty, that navigating that boundary there, being the good support system, and at the same time recognizing where our limits are, that's part of this process of teaching them to grieve. It is a life skill. I'm not going to be there forever. And so I need to be the push for them to learn these skills and to move forward through adulthood.
We'll take another pause and we'll be right back. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Intercultural and Diversity Affairs Center helps to promote awareness and understanding of the wide variety of cultures represented at MTSU. The center provides information, referrals, and resources. Additionally, IDAC tries to make students from different cultures feel welcome and comfortable on campus, so they can have every opportunity to fulfill their academic, social, and personal potential. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Christine McCusker of the Department of History and a co-author with Lori Witherow of the University College of an article on how to deal with the grief of students, faculty, and others on a college campus when a student passes away. You've mentioned the retention issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the two watchwords these days for the public university certainly are retention and graduation.
Mm-hmm.
They're being repeated sort of like a mantra because the mm-hmm. state legislature has changed the funding formula for
sure.
public
mm-hmm.
colleges and universities, tying them to retention and graduation. It seems that this is an aspect of retaining students that kind of goes overlooked or has gone overlooked in the past, because it's touchy-feely and it doesn't have anything to do directly with academics, but it's not something that is top of mind, perhaps because our society doesn't want to think about death, doesn't want to talk about death,
mm-hmm.
doesn't want to deal with death. But you have quoted some statistics.
Mm-hmm.
In 2008, David Balk reported in Assisting Bereaved College Students that bereavement was present as a defining issue in the lives of no less than 40% of college students, but that only a small portion of these students somehow stuck in their grief would benefit from counseling, and that at any given time, 22 to 30% of college undergraduates are in the first 12 months of grieving the death of a family member or friend. How could that not possibly affect a person's decision whether to stay in college or affect a person's grade performance?
I don't see how it can't. And one of the things about retention, and this is one of the things that if Lori Witherow could be with us today, she would talk about the new model of advising in which there's a more intrusiveness with students, in which we say, okay, it's the whole student that we have to engage with, not just the brain. because the whole student goes to class, not just the brains. And so, yeah, and when they say benefit from counseling, they don't mean that if you go to counseling, only a small percentage of people are going to benefit from it. What they're saying is that so few students actually get into counseling that the benefits that you will get from counseling, and I say this as a therapist's daughter, are actually achieved because so many, it's relatively small. It's not a, counseling is not seen sometimes as something that can help you. And that's something that these students need to learn. But definitely this new intrusive model of advising, where the whole student is looked at, particularly fragile ones. And a fragile one will be these students who have a parent die. Had a student, not this, in spring of 2012, father died the first month of school. She had to go to funeral. She had to go take care of some business. And we checked in with her, and we made sure that she was still coming to class. And when she didn't come, we were emailing and making sure that everything was okay. In the South, the family, the extended family, is very, very important. An aunt or an uncle dies. They, if it's an African-American family, they'll wait a week to 10 days to have the funeral to make sure everyone is there. Well, that's an incredible amount of time to be out of school. Mm-hmm. And so this understanding where people are and are you coming back and are we going to be able to make this work up that you missed is a crucial part of it, this intrusive advising, and also a more educating the whole person sort of model that's beginning to emerge as we focus on retention and graduation. And so our pantheon of skill, life learning skills that we're offering is now much bigger than it used to be.
We'll take one more brief break and we'll be right back. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Tennessee Civil War National Heritage Area is managed by MTSU's Center for Historic Preservation. A partnership unit of the National Park Service, the Heritage Area tells the whole story of America's greatest challenge, offering assistance with Civil War and Reconstruction era programs. Our projects include historic driving tours, museum exhibits, and nominations to the National Register of Historic Places. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're back with Dr. Christine McCusker, professor of history and co-author of an article called Bereavement on the College Campus. The Tina Stewart case, in which a basketball player was killed by her roommate, rocked the entire campus and received extensive publicity across the state and across the country because of the sensational nature of it and because intercollegiate athletes are higher profile than other students on campus. They're known quantities. They're seen. Talk to us about how MTSU dealt with that situation.
Well, our group had just met for the first time, and the brochure that emanated came out of the group. The decisions to make a brochure that was available to people on campus was in its draft stages. And we were putting together our coaching staff at the time to see, obvious connection there. When I got an email from Deb Sell saying, Chris, we need to release this now. There's been a murder on campus, off campus of between two MTSU students. And we did. It was still a draft, and I said so in the draft. And we sent it to campus, and it turned out that we dealt with a lot of grief as a campus that in the next weeks. We received an email from a journalism professor later on that she had a bunch of Tina's friends in her class. And it gave her the skills to be able to talk to these students. The way the brochure is set up is a series of questions, obvious questions people ask, and then the responses to them. What do I expect when I talk to students or give them the information that one of their peers have died? And grief comes out in a lot of different ways. Anger, tears, stoic acceptance, silence, being unable to even begin to comprehend what's happened. And obviously, it comes a lot of it from the sense that someone who's young who dies, that's a tragic death. It's not grandpa who's 86 had a great life. It's sad, but it's not tragic. This death was a tragic one. So part of it was dealing with the actual death itself. But there was also a group of students, and I had one in my class that semester, who were friends with Shantarica Madden, the person who was convicted of the crime. And they grieved too. One of the things we realized is that we had to take out the hierarchy of grief in some ways out of this. both of them lost in this system. In no way am I denying that Tina Stewart's death wasn't bad. It was a horrific thing. It was a tragedy. It was awful. But Shantarica Madden's life ended that day too, and her friends understood that. And so we had to address both of them. We had to be fair to everyone and recognize that the grief was what mattered and what needed to be addressed. We also realized that because this was a death with legal ramifications, that we had to address the fact that when somebody dies and a crime has been committed, not everybody can act the way we want them to act because of the legal ramifications. The university administration, for example, could not contact the Madden family because there were legal issues involved with that. The district attorney was involved, and so there had to be a wall there. And the other thing we learned, too, is that another student died a week later, but from illness, and the student was not well-known on campus. So there was a very public, very lovely celebration of life and a memorial for Tina Stewart because she was high-profile. She was well-known. She had a lot of friends on campus, but there wasn't that same high-profile celebration a week later for the other student who passed away from illness because that person wasn't as well known. The circumstances around the death were not as dramatic. Certainly equally a tragedy. And so not every death we learned was going to have the same public response. And some of the things that I'm saying I get are rather controversial. But what I have to focus on is the grief. And I have to focus on the survivors.
How do you make sure that even though all campus deaths might not be equal in the public eye, a lovely professor might be, you know, lionized, and a gentleman who worked as a janitor here for 25 years gets no hearts and flowers whatsoever.
Sure. Yeah.
How do you make sure that those of us who are part of the campus community and are grieving over someone who's not been exalted as a prominent administrator or professor, how do you make sure that the people who loved that individual mm-hmm. also get their grief taken care of?
Well, grief is the great equalizer. See, it's a democratic, everybody's sad. And so you focus on the grief itself rather than on the person necessarily who died. You focus on the grief and you apply the same sort of levels of comfort across the board this is not a denigration or a denial that somebody has died. That person was important. That person was important in people's lives. Some are more public, as you've mentioned, than others are. But that's not what we focus on. We don't focus on the person necessarily who died. We focus on the living.
But you have to make sure that the people who grieve for the janitor don't get overlooked just
exactly.
because he was a janitor.
And because the grief exists. That's what we focus on. You're a grieving person. Let me take care of you, or let me show you the places where we can help you find some comfort. And that's what the equalizer is the grief and the survivors, not the person who died.
If you want a copy of the brochure that tells you how to reach out and what sorts of resources are available to you if you're a member of the MTSU community, send an email to Dr. McCusker at Christine.McCusker@MTSU.edu. That's Christine.McCusker is MCCUSKER, all lowercase, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Chris, for being our guest today.
Thank you very much.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.